Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Jim Gaffey. I'm the Director of Administration at University College. Unfortunately, Eileen Jebus could not be here today. She is staffing some events we have going. As some of you might know, University College turns 100 this year. It marks the 100th anniversary of the first part-time course being offered at Syracuse University back in 1918. We have a series of events leading up to a fundraising gala October 6th of this year. And the proceeds from that gala will be used to fund a centennial scholarship to continue providing pathways to a Syracuse University degree for part-time study. So if any of you are free from noon to 3 today and you want to stop up for open house, I encourage you to do that. And our gala, again, is October 6th, so hopefully you'll be receiving information about that if you can attend as well. At this point, it's my privilege to announce Stephanie Pasquale, who is the Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development for the City of Syracuse, will get up to introduce Mayor Ben Walsh. Stephanie.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. It's a pleasure, and it's an honor to introduce Mayor Walsh to TMR. I know you're going to really enjoy what he has to share today. I also know many of you have heard him speak here at this venue, so I'm going to forego all the formal background and experience, except to share that he must be something special because he graduated from the Maxwell School in Public Administration just a few years after me. So there you go. Fostering a genuine culture of inclusion, collaboration, and optimism, that truly our best days are ahead for us all, is no easy feat and may be hard for some of us skeptics and data nerds to quantify. But I promise you that it is happening. It is something you can feel. And it's something that's permeating not only the halls of city government, but also in the living rooms, the business meetings, and the neighborhood gatherings that I've sat in over the last few months. Not a single week has gone by since January where an individual or organization hasn't reached out to me to say, how can I help? What can I do to pitch in? You're about to hear the mayor's roadmap on how we're getting there, and hopefully discover where you too can advance a culture of inclusiveness and optimism, and where you can pitch in to affect change. So hanging on my office wall every morning, I take a look at the Athenian Oath, which many of you know is etched in the foyer of Maxwell Hall. If you're not with me already on this, after today's presentation, I think you will agree that the vision and concrete plan set forth by Mayor Walsh will get you drinking the Athenian Kool-Aid, and agreeing that together we will transmit this city not only not less, but greater, better, and more beautiful than it was transmitted to us. With that, please join me in welcoming Mayor Ben Walsh.
Good morning, everyone. That was a really nice surprise. I didn't know Stephanie was introducing me, but she is an integral member of our team, and I had the privilege of working with her during my first stint at City Hall, and thrilled to be working with her again. So what I thought I would do this morning is just give you a little bit of an overview as to what we as an administration have been up to over the past, I guess, 100 days or so. You know, everyone makes such a big deal out of this mythical first 100 days, and I can't even tell you when I hit 100 days. But I do think that we've accomplished quite a bit over that time. So I'll give you a quick recap of that. We can talk about the budget and on a related note, our vision and our objectives going forward. So first 100 days, when people ask me what was the first thing I wanted to accomplish as mayor, I said, build a strong team, and I am thrilled to report today that I believe we've done that, as evidenced by Stephanie's opening comments. Thrilled to have her as our Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development. I have my Director of City Initiatives, Greg Lowe, here, and for those of you that know Greg, know that it was an absolute coup that I was able to get him to come over and join us in city government, and just a small detail, move his family into the city as well, which we're thrilled about. We have, of course, our Deputy Mayor, Sharon Owens, who's a good friend and a great community leader. And there's so many more. So I'm thrilled to say we have a great team. When you begin your time as mayor on January 1st in Syracuse, New York, inevitably snow is going to be a big part of what you focus on. And as much as you would think that we would have had it all figured out by now, I felt as a citizen, as a constituent, that our snow clearing services left a bit to be desired. So we dove head into that issue. We brought on, at the same time, a new leadership team at DPW, a new commissioner, Jeremy Robinson, and Deputy Commissioner Ann Fordock, and we own the fact that we need to do a better job clearing snow, not just on the roads, and I'm not glad to say that it's snowing today, but as we sit here today, I do think we made significant improvements over the winter as it relates to snow plowing, but also acknowledging that not everyone has a car in this community, and that we need to make sure that we're accommodating for all modes of transportation. And for those that walk in this city, they know that our sidewalk maintenance, both as it relates to snow clearance and overall general maintenance, is not effective. And so we are still working through some of those challenges, but I think we're on the right track, and hopefully we will make significantly more progress over the course of the next year, especially as it relates to sidewalks. On a lighter note, as we sit here in the zoo, which is a favorite stop of the Walsh family, I have two little girls, Sabrina and Gabby, who are 8 and 4, so this is one of their favorite places. But if you ask them what my biggest accomplishment was in the first 100 days, it undoubtedly would have been the fact that I legalized sledding in the city of Syracuse. And did it just on the other side of the park here at Burnett. I think that whole experience was a reminder of sometimes it's just those little things that make all the difference in the world to people. And standing there on the hill and seeing my 4-year-old Gabby with the same look on her face that, I'm not sure how old he is, but Bob Doherty had as he was sledding down the hill, it was a good feeling and it was a lot of fun. Public engagement, we've done, I'm proud to say that we've accomplished a lot there, in addition to just Greg putting me out on for the road show. One of our proudest accomplishments is the fact that you can log on to the city's YouTube page, and you can find the link on our website, siergov.net, and you can watch live streaming of common council meetings, and very soon all public meetings that take place in the chambers. This was an example where the Common Council really had taken the initiative there and had been pushing that. And when we came into office, all we had to do was get it over the hill, and we did that. And I've been glued to my monitor watching the budget hearings this week, which is probably a sad statement on my life. But for those of you that are interested in those things, I strongly encourage you to check it out. A few other things. Policing is obviously an important issue. Public safety, we've made a lot of progress there, a lot to go. I brought in 3 new deputy chiefs. Deputy Chief Derek McGorick overseeing our investigations bureau, Lynette Del Favro overseeing patrol, and Deputy Chief Richoff overseeing community policing. 3 new leaders that I'm really excited about that are bringing in a new era in the police department. And in the meantime, we're also in the midst of a national search for our next police chief. Chief Fowler has agreed to stay on throughout 2018. We have First Deputy Chief Joe Cecil in place as well. And I think one of the unexpected benefits of taking the time to do this search is that we're in the midst of this entire month of April of having public meetings. And it has given us a really amazing opportunity to have open and honest dialogue about policing and community police relations at a time when it's not only really important in the city of Syracuse, but nationally. And I think for those of us that have been involved, we've been heartened by the dialogue that's taken place and how that will inform our search going forward. Number of other examples, but I'm gonna get into a little bit about our vision and how that informed our budget, which we're also in the midst of right now. So about a month ago or so, I mentioned my team, and we took our senior staff out to Highland Forest for a Sunday afternoon session, and then brought the rest of our department heads out on Monday, and we spent that time out in a quiet place, just talking and listening and crafting a vision that would drive us forward. In addition to that, we identified a number of objectives, and those objectives have again informed our budget process and will inform the administration going forward. So the vision that we came up with: Syracuse will be a growing city that embraces diversity and creates opportunity for all. So let me unpack that a little bit. I know it's a brief statement, but there's a lot there. So diversity, literally and figuratively at the center of it all. We will be a stronger city if we embrace the strength of our diversity. I've tried to show that in the way that I've built my team, in the way that we've put together our the many boards that we oversee at the city, and diversity is a central component to everything that we do. The fact that we'll be a growing city, that is something that we haven't been in a very long time. And I truly believe, I'm an optimist by nature, but I truly believe that that we are going to begin to grow as a city. And as I've said throughout the campaign, we can't cut our way to prosperity. We have to grow. And so we wanted to be intentional in doing that, which leads me to my next point. We don't want to just grow for the sake of growth. We want to do it in a way that empowers all people in our community to take advantage of that economic opportunity. As much as I was generally aware of it, knocking on as many doors as I did throughout the campaign really opened up my eyes to, as much as I was very happy to talk about the progress that we have made as a community, citizens were quick to point out that many of them felt no connection to the investment that is happening in our community. So that I really took that as a challenge to how we can do a better job ensuring that there truly is opportunity for all people in the city. So I mentioned with that vision in place, we established a number of objectives, four to be specific. I'm just going to run through those. So first, achieve fiscal sustainability. Without that, we can't accomplish anything else that we want to accomplish. Two, increase economic growth and neighborhood stability. Three, deliver city services effectively and efficiently. And four, provide high-quality constituent engagement and response. So as we entered into our first budgeting process, we started with the vision and then looked at every decision we made through the lens of are we accomplishing one of these four objectives. So with that, let's talk about the budget. Some realities that we were facing as we started out on that process. On a positive note, assessed valuation is growing slightly, albeit not at the rate that we would like, but it is growing, which certainly is better than the alternative. State municipal aid, or AIM, remained flat this year. Again, we advocated aggressively for an increase, and to the credit of our local legislators, they advocated as well. Ultimately, the state was facing a difficult budget process of their own, and so we have AIM at a level rate, which again is better than a decrease. I bring up the fact that the Carousel Center expansion fee that we were receiving annually ended last year. I don't bring that up to cast aspersions, simply to point out that immediately punched a $3.2 million hole in our budget that had to be filled. So that was a reality that we faced. And sales tax, I think many of you know how much we depend on sales tax. It's our biggest source of revenue. And the good news is, over the past year, it grew, and we're anticipating moderate growth again this year at a rate of 2.8%. On the expenses side, the biggest challenge for us is that 40% of our expenses are very difficult to control: healthcare, pension, and debt service. The good news on pensions, employees have retired and the newer employees have a higher pension tier, our pension payments have leveled off, so that's the good news. Healthcare is still very volatile and continues to go up, so that's very difficult to control. And of course, debt service is just a reality that we have to face every day. So with those realities, some highlights of the budget that we put together. I will point out that we are still very much in the midst of that process. As I remind the councilors all the time, we're in this together. This is our budget. My goal when we started the process was to ensure that when the budget landed on the desks of the common councilors, that there would be no surprises in there. We engaged them early and often in the process and continue to, and I think it's resulted in thus far a productive process that that again is not over, but I think we're headed in the right direction. So total budget, $245 million. To put that into context, that does not include the city school district budget. They are dependent. We have a dependent school district here. But what's significant about that number is that it's flat compared to the prior year. Now, when we had a budget meeting with the state budget office, they quickly pointed out that they've kept their budget flat for the past 8 years or so, and good for them. But for us, that was something that hadn't been happening. So keeping it level keeping it flat was important, and it wasn't easy. Typically, the way that the process works is the department heads submit their budget to the budget office. They push back, and we end up with a budget. That process happened, and then the department heads came back with what they believed to be their final budgets, and we pushed them harder and challenged each of them to take an additional 5% out of their budget, which was no small feat. We did that in a way we think that was a data-driven, informed process. Instead of just asking them to blindly cut 5%, we actually went back and looked at previous budget years, and specifically last year, and gave them a chart that showed them where they have historically overspent and underspent. So when they were cutting, they were doing it in an informed way. Highlights from the budget: no property tax rate increase, which I'll be happy to talk about. We looked very hard at it, but the reality was, number one, that would have a 1% property tax rate increase would have resulted in about $300,000 for the city of Syracuse. $1 million total, but again, the majority of that going to the school district. Not an insignificant amount of money, but when we're facing an $11 million operating deficit, it certainly wasn't going to get us out of our fiscal challenges. And frankly, I think we've made a lot of progress in addressing and cleaning up our own house over the past 3 months, but we have a ways to go. And so I felt strongly that if we were going to ask our citizens and our property owners, and again, we're only talking about 50% of them, to bear a greater burden of the of property taxes, that we wanted to make sure that we were doing everything we could and spending our resources as effectively and efficiently as possible. We're making investments in a smarter city, and I'll talk more about that. We're accessing we're requesting support from the State Financial Restructuring Board, which I'm quick to point out is different than the Fiscal Control Board that we've been, that is, people have suggested has been looming. This is a resource that the state offers. They provide, if you request their assistance, they provide non-binding advice. You can take it and do nothing with it, but if you take their advice, they provide up to $5 million for implementation of those recommendations. So for us, that was really a no-brainer. And finally, as I mentioned, we ended up with an $11 million projected operating deficit. While that was better than some of the early projections that were closer to $20 to $25 million, it's still unsustainable. So we have about $52.8 million in fund balance right now, not accounting for what we anticipate will be about a $7 million deficit at the end of our fiscal year, which ends at the end of June this year. So we have some room to breathe, but again, as long as we're operating in a deficit, we're operating unsustainably. So that's something that we want to change quickly. So I'm just going to dive a little bit deeper into the budget and talk about some of the specific actions that we've taken. I mentioned the requested 5% cut of department budgets. We didn't get there in every department, but it did help us to save an additional $2.8 million in our budget. We did try to work with each department to address any immediate staffing issues, either from filling positions or salary perspective, and we addressed those issues, and we have an understanding that going forward, starting with the beginning of the fiscal year, we will be instituting a go-forward hiring and salary freeze. Going to that was within the objective of achieving fiscal sustainability. Give you some highlights in each one of the objectives under deliver city services effectively and efficiently. One of the things that we're most excited about, I mentioned some investments. Again, we can't cut our way to prosperity. We have to make smart investments that help us to grow our way out of this problem. One example of that is with our streetlights. So we have over 17,000 streetlights in the city of Syracuse. I see Al here from National Grid, and I will note that National Grid has been a very good partner to us. But ultimately, when we looked at the issue, we came to the conclusion that we could achieve significant savings by taking ownership of our street lighting infrastructure in a couple of ways. One, on operation and maintenance. And two, on energy savings, because the first thing we will do when we acquire the streetlights is to retrofit all of them with LED lights. We are working with the New York Power Authority, who will be financing that acquisition for us, so we won't be doing it on city books. And we We are confident that the savings that we achieve will help us to cover debt service in the short term and in the long term achieve significant savings. And on top of that, be able to do some, frankly, really cool things with our lighting, our streetlight infrastructure that we haven't been able to do before. Essentially, what we're doing is deploying a kind of a smart grid technology. It will give us the ability to raise and dim the lights. It will give us the ability to, we can do other things like traffic management, we can attach Wi-Fi to the lights. The possibilities are endless, and as we aspire to be a smart, progressive city, we really think this is the way of the future, and we're excited about that investment. Another example, GPS technology. We currently have all of our DPW fleet equipped with GPS. We're looking to extend that beyond DPW into parks and into water to make sure that we're, again, providing our services as effectively and efficiently as possible. Under the objective of increased economic growth and neighborhood stability, a couple examples. I talked about what we're doing with policing. A couple things I didn't mention. We've authorized a new class of police officers. We think that that's very important to make sure that we have sufficient staffing, not only to protect our citizens when they need help, but also when there aren't emergencies and when our officers aren't going from call to call, to be in a position where they can start building and developing relationships in the community. We have challenged our department as we go through the recruiting process that we want this to be the most diverse recruiting class that the police department has seen, and we're working towards that. Also related to policing, we think that deploying body cams throughout the police department is in the best interests of our police officers and in the community, and we've heard that from all stakeholders on all sides of the issue. So we're just coming to completion of a pilot body cam pilot program where we had 16 body cameras out in the city, and our goal is to have every officer on the street equipped with a body camera as quickly as possible. Finally, on constituent engagement, I mentioned we have live streaming now. We are going to be upgrading the city website, which, for those of you who have spent any amount of time on it, it hasn't been upgraded in at least 10 years, and we are looking forward to doing a complete overhaul there and making it easier to engage with your local government. The final note I want to make on the budget is that we think it's important not just to be strategic in how we put together our budget, but also that as we begin to implement that budget and our various initiatives, that we're doing it in a way that we are holding ourselves accountable, and that we're giving the community the opportunity to hold us accountable. We have created, we're launching an Office of Accountability, Performance, and Innovation, API. If you've been in City Hall, previously known as the Searstat Room, and essentially the idea is the same. Of course, technology and the methods have evolved, but and Jim, you know a little something about that. You spent a little bit of time in the Searstat Room over the years. But essentially the idea is to have a performance-based management system to make sure that we are, I mentioned the objectives. The next step after the objectives is to identify key results for each one of those objectives for each department, and then to track them and establish very clear metrics that we can track going forward. So we're excited about the role of the API in helping us to do that. We're also going to be regularly uploading information onto our open data portal we call DataQuse. I discussed it last night at a meeting. All of the information that we have, it's public information, it's yours. And I think for far too long it's been very difficult for the average citizens and the media, Stan, to access public information. So wherever possible, we've challenged all of our departments to identify information that we can just push out on DataQuse and make publicly available at any time. So again, just to review the objectives: achieve fiscal sustainability, increase economic growth and neighborhood stability, deliver city services effectively and efficiently, and provide high-quality constituent engagement and response. That's the lens that we're viewing our work through. I will close and be happy to answer questions just by making a statement. People have asked, how things are going since I've started, and just a few observations. Number one, I love my job more than I ever thought I could. I knew I was going to love it, but there is not a moment that goes by every day, and we've had some tough days. Every day, there's we get some amount of bad information or difficult challenge, but there's not a day that goes by where I don't have a moment where I just sit back and go, how lucky am I that I have this job in the city that I love? And I feel stronger about it than I ever have, and I'm just thrilled and blessed to be in this position. Also, something that I said regularly throughout the campaign, to the point where my opponents were beating me to the punch and quoting me, I truly believe our best days are ahead of us. I believe that now more than I did on January 1 when I started. The challenges that I just identified through the budgeting process are daunting, but they're not insurmountable. And with the team that we've developed, with the support, and I'm really glad that Stephanie talked about the outpouring of support that we've received from the community. I can't tell you how many people have just come up to me and said, how can I help? There are so many people, many of you in this room, that are just looking for ways to help, and my challenge is to figure out ways to take you up on that. And with that help, and with the team that we've assembled, I have no doubt that our best days are ahead of us. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just want to say thank you to the mayor for a very thoughtful, informative, and concise presentation. Our questions today, because you'll note the mayor stopped a little bit early, he has to leave right at 9 o'clock, so we'll cut questions off at 9. I saw there was a hand over here. Yes.
Mayor, thank you for coming to TMR.
Sure.
I didn't hear the word consolidation mentioned in any of your presentation. Could you talk about any initiatives with the county or others that would also help with efficiencies?
Absolutely. No, I'm glad you brought that up. And it is the topic of shared services and potentially consolidation is something that we are proactively engaged in and seeking. I meet regularly with the county executive, with members of the legislature. I mentioned my team. We have Bob Andrews on our team who he took the role that was previously known as Director of Intergovernmental Relations. His title, albeit a bit longer, is Director of Intergovernmental Relations and Shared Services. So we believe that shared services is an integral part of right-sizing our government and achieving fiscal sustainability. In addition to regularly engaging with the county executive and the ledge, I've been engaging with town supervisors and village mayors. We think there are real opportunities out there, especially in back-end functions, some of our financial functions. So we're not quite there yet, but it's absolutely part of our strategy. But we're always going to do it in a way that first and foremost. That we determine. I was elected by the people of the city of Syracuse, so it's critical for me that whatever we do is in the best interest of the city of Syracuse first and foremost. My point is that what's in the best interest of the city and the region, they can be the same thing, and we're going to identify those opportunities, but we're not going to predetermine the outcome, and I'm not going to say we're going to start down this path and get to a point where we're going to consolidate at any level. We're simply going to be, engage with our partners, identify opportunities, pursue them when it makes sense, and we're doing that right now.
Yeah, Ben, appreciate your comments on consolidation, but what I'd like to know more is what is your relationship with the county executive? Have you reached out to cultivate that? Because I think that a good relationship, including a personal relationship between the mayor and the county executive, could go a long way because there are individual initiatives that they could help us with.
Yeah, so I'm happy to answer that question. I had a conversation at the beginning before we got started. We were talking about the previous administration and the previous relationship between the mayor and the county executive. And without casting any blame or pointing fingers, I was in City Hall in 2010, 2011, at the beginning of Mayor Minor's administration, when that relationship was strong, and it was a beautiful thing. With the relationship at the executive level as strong as it was, that trickled down, and it allowed me to engage with my counterparts at the county in a way where there was mutual trust and a desire to help each other, and it absolutely made a difference in our ability to get things done. We know as a community we have a lot of forces working against us that we have no control over, but we know when we work together, doesn't mean we have to agree all the time, it helps. And so I've been very intentional about cultivating that relationship. The county executive and I go back a long way. We've known each other for most of our lives, and we have we're in touch multiple times every week, if not daily, and that relationship is strong and will continue to get stronger. But it's not limited to the county executive. Again, I mentioned the ledge. We have Peggy Chase here from the legislature. I'm making it a point to sit down with every one of our legislators to build that relationship. We know, and I think the county executive was here recently talking about sales tax. We have our next sales tax negotiation looming. And having strong relationships at every level can only help us, and that's something that it's a priority for me.
Mayor, every year for about a week or two, we get the report on the overtime of the police department, and when we do, we talk about it in a negative way. Will the addition of the new police people in this next year, will that create any change in overtime? That's one piece of the question.
Yeah. So the short answer is yes. You know, that overtime it's a difficult animal, but we are trying to get our arms around it. I do believe that part of the solution is making sure that the police department is appropriately staffed and bringing in a new class, right, which we should have in place by July, and we've budgeted for the possibility, depending on retirements, of bringing in another class that we think that will help. There are also certain things that need to be negotiated through collective bargaining, and we have not just our PBA contract to negotiate this year, we actually have all 8 of our bargaining units out of contract. So some may look at that as a problem. I'm going to embrace it as an opportunity to try to address that issue and others. But what we're doing right now is it's not in the best interests of the city or, frankly, of the police department. We have a number of officers that are working too many hours, and we talk about we need to make sure that our officers are at their best when they're often dealing with people at their worst.
The second piece of this question is, I do believe that you have to pick the people for overtime that have the greatest time on the force. Mm. And what that means is you may be picking up some high-cost people at the time when the actual overtime requires low-cost people. Is that going to be negotiated somewhere along the line?
I believe so. My feeling is we need to make sure that we have the best officers working in the community, regardless of time. So to the extent that needs to be negotiated, we'll certainly look at it. But I think it's all part of the bigger negotiation.
When you think about economic growth, what role do our arts and culture organizations play in that, in your mind?
A significant one. I was over at the Red House's new facility a couple weeks ago, and there is no doubt that that's going to have a significant impact on our downtown and regional economy. I had the opportunity to welcome the U.S. Bowling Congress into town, the impact, the economic impact of that event here cannot be understated. It's significant. So, I'm a supporter and proponent of arts and culture. And, I've been involved in some of our economic development planning efforts over the years, especially through the state's efforts in arts and culture has been a significant component of those plans and under my administration will continue to be.
Thanks, Ben. This has been an excellent presentation, and I'm particularly, as you know, appreciative of anything to improve modernization of local government and collaboration with others providing public services. Could you talk some more about how you are pursuing modern infrastructure management in collaboration with the other providers, such as the franchise agreements that have not been signed, and working with Spectrum and some of the other providers that we have? And then finally, just and you mentioned GPS, you know, computer mapping, how that's going to be delivered. But then more generally, second part is, as any leader knows, the first 6 months are the honeymoon period in a position like yours. Do you anticipate some tough decisions that you're going to be making that are in the best interest of the city during that 6 month period? And how can we help you prepare the rest of the residents for that?
Yeah. Ooh, there's a lot there, Lisa. Let's start with we'll start with technology. So again, making strategic investments in technology is a critical part of our strategy. An area, and I'm happy to give credit to Mayor Miner. And in one particular area, I would, as it relates to technology, is with our innovation team, our I team. We have really embraced the role of our I team in helping us to make decisions in all of our operating departments using GIS and mapping. Between the I team and what Stephanie's team can do in neighborhood and business development, mapping is a critical component to all of the work that we're doing. I mentioned GPS. Some of the early investments that the previous administration made as a result of the work of the I team around predictive technology that can help us be more proactive in how we deal with our water infrastructure. Those are all examples of where we're investing in technology. And you know, we're going to continue to look for opportunities. The second part of your question around the honeymoon period, it's funny. I've been trying to figure out when that ends, and I assumed it was going to be around budget. And you know, we're not done yet, so it that still could be. But you know, I in all honesty, I mean, like I said, there have been difficult days, and we have daunting challenges. I would like to think that rather than a honeymoon period, you know, we're laying the foundation for for collaborative, collegial governance across party lines, across geographic lines, across racial and cultural lines. Why I believe I was successful in the campaign is because I pitched a big tent, and we were we embraced being inclusive, and that worked for us certainly during the campaign, and I believe it will work for us in governance. I'm hoping that it never ends, time will tell. But I believe the investments that I've made leading up to my time as mayor and since I've been mayor in building relationships, again, with the understanding that we're not always going to agree. I mean, when I have these conversations with town supervisors and village mayors, sometimes it's hard to find things that we agree on, whether we're talking about 81, I'm a strong advocate of the community grid option, whether we're talking about sales tax. But I think by continuing the dialogue and making sure that we stay at the table, regardless of our disagreements, I think will pay off.
Thank you for sharing your comments about sustainability. I'm concerned about the poverty rate for children in our community and whether that's going to be sustainable for our future, with 50% of our children currently living in poverty. Could you address that, please?
Yeah, it's not sustainable. It's a crisis, and there's no easy fix. There's no one place we can focus all of our energy and resources. It has to be attacked at every level. As a parent of a child in the city school district next year, I think the relationship that we have with this school district and investing in the school district and our children is critical. I'm heartened by the work that the district is doing under the leadership of both Superintendent Alisea and the school board. And I see my role as mayor is simply to be supportive of that. And I'd like to think so far I have. I meet regularly with Jaime. But it's not limited to just the school district. I touched briefly on, within the realm of economic opportunity, how do we ensure that people in the city are being provided with opportunities to work? That has to do with addressing everything from education to soft skills to alignment with training. And with our Syracuse Build initiative, we are hopeful that we can build our community's capacity to take advantage of the opportunities that we see. As anxious as I am to see a decision made with the 81 project, the reality is if the decision was made tomorrow, we as a community wouldn't have the capacity to take full advantage of that economic opportunity, both from the construction of whatever happens to the investment that we hope will follow. Education, workforce development, and housing too. Housing can the role of housing cannot be underestimated. You know, I mentioned the I team. Every year they have to focus on a particular area. We engaged with the community and allowed for the community members to vote on what they wanted our priority to be this year. The top two vote getters were sidewalks, which we think that we are addressing, and housing stability. I don't know if anyone here has read Evicted, but when you start to look at the housing stability as it relates to people's ability to, you know, get their education, to hold down a job, it's significant. So housing stability, housing affordability, making sure that we're developing mixed income neighborhoods, we're not concentrating all of our wealth into particular neighborhoods and all of our poverty into others. That means that we have to push our housing developers on the market rate side to begin to incorporate varying levels of income and affordable housing. We need to push our affordable housing partners to do more mixed income and more market rate. The good news is the tools that we have to incentivize that development are beginning to reflect those values and those priorities both at the state level, and we're working very hard on the local level, whether it's through the Syracuse Industrial Development Agency, through our CDBG or home allocations, to support that type of development. So, again, we have to attack it at every level.
As I understand it, tax-exempt properties represent one of the biggest financial difficulties or obstacles as far as city government is concerned. Is there any interest in or any way that you could accomplish, for example, the county has all kinds of real estate here in the city. Could you enter into service agreements with them? I think you've done it with Syracuse University.
Yeah.
Could this be done as far as county government is concerned? It works to the advantage of the county, and also, as I look at it, to the residents of the towns and villages as well. The second one is economic development. I'm a proponent, a fierce proponent of economic development. Have you given any serious consideration to combining the economic development offices of the city and the county?
Yeah.
And reduce the splintering that's inherent in our economic development process?
Absolutely. So on the issue of service agreements, frankly, I haven't had any conversations relative to the county, county-owned property paying taxes. The county is supportive of us in a number of ways, and frankly, you know, I'd have to look at the numbers. I'm not, you know, I don't think they're a significant property holder in the city, but you know, that's something that we could certainly look at. Some of the other tax-exempt institutions, we have Be Here from SU and to Syracuse University's credit, both under the previous chancellor and the current one. They've really stepped up and acknowledged that they have a role to play. That's an ongoing conversation that we have. And also, you know, as we have that conversation with Syracuse, with our other not-for-profit institutions, I think we're selling ourselves short if we're limiting it just to property taxes. I'm certainly going to try to extract value from those institutions, but I think it can be done in a number of different ways. So, and the good news is, across the board, all the leaders of these institutions that we've talked to, from Linda Lemura to Les Luke at St. Joe's, there's been a willingness to engage in the conversation and to explore ways to help. I was just at a ribbon cutting for the Butternut Crossing project, which does happen to be primarily affordable housing, but some mixed use and some mixed income. And the work that project is really the outcome of early investments that St. Joseph's Hospital made on the north side in partnership with Housing Visions and Home Headquarters and other partners. So I think we have to take all of that into consideration when we have those conversations. But I'm going to continue to try to get value. On the economic development front, absolutely. I was part of the co-located city-county economic development offices. In many ways, the two offices do different work, but there is also significant overlap, particularly around the industrial development agencies. And we know what happens when those IDAs compete. We lose. The only ones that benefit are those that are pitting the two municipalities against each other. Frankly, I've had multiple conversations with the county executive, and in the case of the IDAs, more importantly, Ryan McMahon is the chair of the legislature that appoints all of the board members of OSIDA. We're talking about it regularly. We have not come to an agreement on the ideal model yet, not because we're in disagreement, just that we're not sure we found the perfect model yet. But in the interim, I can tell you I received a call from the county within the past week where there was a project that was located within the city that was exploring whether or not OSIDA would consider an application, and the message was you need to work with the city. So in practice, we're already there, and we hope to be soon in policy in the way that that our systems are set up.
Earlier in your presentation, you spoke about one of your objectives of providing high quality constituent engagement and responses. And I think we all know that you're providing the city councils now streaming their proceedings. Can you elaborate on some other objectives or tasks or ways that you're increasing engagement?
Yeah, so streaming is a big part of it. I mentioned our website. We think that is often the front door for a lot of our constituents. We can do much better on that. We have we currently have an online reporting system it's an expansion of our CityLine system where you can call up or log on to register complaints. We think we can make that much more user-friendly. We are trying to, again, engage. Public meetings is an important part of our engagement strategy. We're spending this entire month just on meetings on the police search. We're trying to use social media differently, whether it's through Facebook Live or other avenues. I would encourage all of you to, if there are ways in which you're seeing, if you see opportunities for us to engage in new and different ways, to tell us, because we're really trying to push the envelope there, but I'm sure there's more we could be doing.
I think we're out of time. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you.